Welcome to In Conversation With from Devon Chamber. Supported by Westcott's Chartered Accountants and Business Advisors. Presented by Stuart Elford. Recorded at Fresh Air Studios in Plymouth.
Hello and welcome to a very special episode of In Conversation With. I'm not Stuart Elford, but fear not, he will be featuring as we discuss and explore the brand new Devon Chamber of Commerce, incorporating the Plymouth Chamber of Commerce and the Exeter Chamber of Commerce. With me, we have a delightful array of gorgeous looking gentlemen here. I'm going to get them to introduce themselves, and we will start in the far corner with Richard Stevens. Richard, introduce yourself, please, sir, and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hello, well, I'm Richard Stevens. I have the honour of being the chair of the Chamber of Commerce. My chamber journey's been over 10 years now, and I've pretty much loved every minute of it. My day job, I run a bus company.
Going places, you could say.
They certainly do go places.
Yeah. But it's fantastic. Yeah, yeah. We also have Steve.
Absolutely, Steve Gates, honoured to be the vice chair of Devon Chamber and the chair of Exeter Chamber. Again, a chamber journey which goes back previously to being vice president of Hampshire Chamber as well. So well versed in regional chamber world. Day job, I work for a company that provides personal alarms for the elderly.
Marvellous. Richard.
Hi, I'm Richard Marsh. I'm CEO of the Exeter Chamber and now deputy CEO of the new Devon Chamber. And I guess I'm a newbie to the world of chambers, 3 years in, having come from the world of industry and waste and recycling, having run a business there for the last 10, 15 years.
Fantastic. And of course, this person to my right.
Yes, Stuart Elford, CEO of Plymouth Chamber and Devon Chamber, and I chair British Chambers of Commerce Southwest.
Fantastic. Right. So for our listeners, they may well have caught on to the fact that a lot has happened in chamber world with regards to the West Country. Definitely the Devon Chamber is making quite a scene for itself. Let's ask the question about the merger and how on earth the merger came to happen. I guess it's been quite a while in the making. Who would like to go first and talk about the merger?
Well, I think I could probably kick off, really, because as the newbie, I came in and inherited and joined a very progressive Exeter Chamber. It was a relatively new board just after COVID. A lot in the world of industry had changed, a lot in the world of certainly Exeter Chamber had changed. And we as a chamber became very aware that going it alone, if you like, was actually possibly not the right thing to do and that the world had changed. We're much more interactive. We were much more collaborative. And given there would maybe have been some historical past tensions that I was unaware of but was told about, it kind of made sense that we looked further afield and looked to grow both our geography and our membership.
Richard, what's it like to be merged?
It's pretty stressful, to be honest. Picking up from Richard's journey from the Exeter side into this, from a Plymouth point of view, we have always been passionate about the fact that a joined up business voice for Devon was an essential part of business in our region. And we long admired our friends in Exeter. And so I think to a certain extent, the conversation grew organically, really. It was almost sort of eyes across a room and it just made sense. I think the story almost wrote itself at the right time. And the journey took many people. You know, the baton had been sort of handed through over the years. And gradually the relationship, the vision, the values just came into an alignment. And I think in terms of the merger, actually, it went so much easier than it might have done. I mean, we did a handbrake turn right at the end when the lawyers were suggesting structures and we all dealt with it. Everybody sort of rallied to it. And I think the really great thing is that it's not us. It's not the people sat around the table that make up the chamber. It's the members. Those members volunteer to be board members. And the warmth, the energy, the commitment from all of those people, I think that's what spurred us on and just gave us the lift to get it done. And universally across all the entities, all the organizations, all the businesses that we represent, there was a real warmth for doing this. You know, not just a warmth, but a, yeah, get this done. And I guess I better give a shout out to, well, not I guess, I want to give a shout out to the exec, because obviously they had to put in a ton of work. So Richard and Stuart and their teams had to get the merger done as well as the day job. Just huge plaudits to everybody involved.
I think it's really important that we started off with absolutely the right goals. And I think the old Stephen Covey, start with the end in mind. We wanted to recognise that we had two powerhouse chambers in Exeter and Plymouth within the Southwest. And we wanted to retain and reinforce that
local identity, that local support. But exactly to both Richard's point, we understood that the world is moving and that we therefore needed a really clear voice, a unified voice for Devon. And I think that was a gap in our chamber offering previously. So I think we started off with that as being a really clear goal. And I agree with Richard, it's taken some hard yards to get there, but actually feels like we've achieved that.
Yeah, the stars sort of aligned a bit, didn't they? Because not only were our values and mission that very closely aligned, but also with devolution, it made absolute sense to cover Devon. And to pick up Richard's point, there was not only a warmth from the members, there was a unanimity. You know, when it came to a vote, because it means changing our articles of association and that sort of thing, absolute unanimous support. And I think this goes back to this point that businesses don't recognise boundaries. We may have a geographic area in which we work, but they work across all boundaries, you know, and that's part of what chambers do. You know, we introduce businesses around the world to new markets.
Gentlemen, it seems that something that you've achieved within the business landscape is something that you would like to see happen within the political landscape, but, you know, for want of a better form of comparison.
We are apolitical in the sense that we don't align ourselves with a political party or a politician, and the only time we'll be critical, if you like, is as a critical friend to policies that aren't helpful to business. But certainly we are examining that question of what do businesses think about devolution, because we've never been asked. Nobody's ever come to the business community and said, do you want devolution? So I think we're going to do a bit of work around that and say what would be right for business, and do we take a stance on that?
I mean, what businesses say is what we absolutely want is investment in the Southwest. We have opportunity, we've got talent, we've got resources, we've got great people, and we're a great place to do business. And digitally, we're not disconnected from the world. We're here and we're ready to go. There is already investment coming our way, which we very much want to see amplified. We want to see the benefits. We want to see the local supply chain really empowered and embedded in the community. So we have to follow the politics in terms of we want the investment to come into the Southwest. And I think the Chamber's job is to make sure that we are literally screaming from the rooftops about the opportunities for investment. And it's not about begging bowls. There's no point. That isn't going to turn the fortunes of the business community in our patch. It's about really, really showcasing the opportunities. It's about making sure members are aware of what the opportunities are, because it's not just a question of ask, it's offer, and it's a coherent offer.
And I think it's about being able to join together for those shovel-ready projects as well, not simply to talk about devolution, but to be able to demonstrate very clearly that businesses are engaging in this, and these are the activities that are right at the top of businesses' lists in terms of being able to deliver something very practical in a reasonable timescale as well.
It's very much about our voice and the new collective chamber, the new Devon chamber. That's where the power of the voice comes, because with nearly 1,000 members, 1,000 businesses, that's a lot of business. That's a lot of employees. You know, there's a lot of responsibility on our shoulders to ensure that we actually get our fair share of the cake, because there's no doubt the cake is going to be divided and it's being divided as we probably sit here and speak.
A big part of that, of course, is the practical aspects of that cake being divided locally. So as Richard alluded to, there's billions of pounds of investment coming to the dockyard. You know, that money is coming. That's it. It is on its way. The trick for us is to ensure that a lot of that money stays in the local supply chain. So we have a local procurement website called Find It in Plymouth. Particularly, that's Find It in Plymouth because it's in partnership with Babcock to ensure that those big contracts use local supply wherever possible. Otherwise, the money that's going into the dockyard will not stay in the region. So it's very, very important that we explain to our members what the opportunities are, that we open those opportunities up to them, we help them in the tendering process, and make sure that everyone gets a go at bidding into those big sums.
Richard touched on the fact earlier that very much we're in a digital world now. So how can chambers stay relevant? There will be doubters out there who say, I don't want to join a chamber because they feel it's been around for hundreds of years. That's not new and not modern. It's not relevant to me. So how do chambers stay relevant?
The key is to listen to your membership. And that's something we as a chamber, we're actually good at. So we do regularly survey. We do hold regular meetings, as you know, up to 100 events a year. So we're constantly listening and understanding and reacting to what our members say and what they need. And I think that's how you stay relevant.
We also offer benefit to businesses that aren't part of the chamber. We're an advocacy for business. And I think being in business can be pretty lonely. And one of the best things that chambers do is break down that isolation. Whether you're a CEO, a one-person band, it doesn't matter. There will be times when the world feels like it's caving in on your head and you haven't got anybody to talk to. Sometimes it's difficult to talk to your competitors because it's like a dance. But you can come into a safe space and you can talk to people and you can find out a lot of intelligence about the world that you're trying to do business in. And that, I think, is one of the biggest benefits of Chamber. That's what members say to me. It's that comfort of belonging to something. And our mission is inclusive. Everybody's in our camp. You know, we want to make sure that the business environment in Devon, in the Southwest, is the best that it can possibly be.
And I think that's one of the huge strengths. If you look at Devon Chamber, we have businesses, early setups, one-person businesses just finding their way. And we have absolutely national behemoths that happen to be located in Devon, in Exeter and Plymouth. And we've got that absolute range of membership. And I think that does mark out a chamber as unique. If you look at the other business representative organisations, they tend to focus on a particular niche, either small businesses or directors or whatever. I think the chamber excels when it represents, as Richard said, business generally, not getting fixated about size of business or type of business.
That's a really good point. So there's an aspect of inclusivity that's very much at play here as well.
Absolutely. All sizes, all sectors. And you know, traditionally, chambers have worked more in certain areas, certain sectors, you know, that used to be professional services. But I say we more and more are all sizes, all sectors. We're doing work to reach out into communities that we wouldn't normally or traditionally have reached. So younger people, we have a 30 under 30 in Plymouth and a next gen in Exeter. We're working with the BAME community, trying to reach into that and support those people. So we want to truly represent all businesses. It's not always easy, but we're doing what we can.
And what challenges do chambers have? By all means, be relevant and reflect upon the region that we serve.
We face the same challenges as all businesses. Mm. I guess that's why we're very sympathetic to the issues and what's happening in the world. I mean, we're currently all facing issues around rising overheads and costs through employment costs. So we're not immune to that. We suffer the same pain. And we have to react in the same ways because we are literally, we are a business.
And you said the word relevant. You glossed over it almost in a sense of, oh, we know. But actually, I think that's absolutely important because we are as only as strong as the members that we represent. And if our members don't believe that we're representing them either locally with the activities we run, the training that we run, the helplines that we offer, and relevant where we are speaking on their behalf to local government, because I think often businesses say, to Richard's point, I have enough on my plate without having to deal with local authorities and local government, but I want the benefits of being able to engage with them. And therefore, I think that's something that the chamber can absolutely offer because of the conversations that we do have with the local authorities, with the devolved authorities.
So you mentioned benefits then. What are the real world benefits that the membership will be seeing as part of the merger?
Can I just do the extra bit first? Because I think this is a genuine and immediate and tangible benefit. So prior to the merger, Exeter was not an accredited chamber. But now that we have joined as part of Devon Chamber, which is an accredited chamber, then all of the benefits of being an accredited chamber immediately apply to Exeter members as well. Be that the additional information that the BCCI produces, be that the trade documentation, be that the international policy, be that the HR helplines, the contract templates that they can now get access to. So from an Exeter membership point of view, they've immediately received these benefits as a result of the work that we've done together.
And in terms of the network, certainly from an Exeter membership, it's gone up by a multiple of three or four. And likewise with the traditional Plymouth members, that kind of A38 gap has gone. We are now genuinely as good as we can be a Devon representative body. And so the opportunity for business to interact with business has dramatically increased because we're all part of the same club, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, the opportunity. And I think that's just starting to dawn on people. I did an interview yesterday. And actually, the more I spoke about it and the more I was questioned on it, I kept thinking, actually, yeah, we've really opened up some business here for a lot of organizations are going, can I look at that member list? Can I look at this member list? I've always wanted to talk to that person or that organization. Well, now you can do it. It's a lot easier. We've kind of opened the door.
You've got your director's breakfast. We've never done that event in Exeter. They have a director's breakfast. We've got more than a dozen members already signed up from the traditional Plymouth membership to travel to Exeter to do that. Plymouth members never realised or never thought they could do business in Exeter and vice versa. And it's an open door now. There's no restrictions. I think your point about challenges for chambers, as Richard said, we're small businesses. People forget we're a business ourselves. We employ 13 people. We have to pay the bills like everyone else. We have to be sustainable. And membership organisations of all types struggle with that. So we have to be diverse. We have to have various income streams as well as our membership base. But we have to show value to our members. We can't expect them to assume the value. We've introduced a new piece of software that's going to capture that value so we can explain to people as they come up to renewal what they've used that year, how much that is worth, what other benefits they've got. And I think we've still got a big piece of work to do to explain what chambers of commerce are. I've just taken in a lodger and she said to me, what's a chamber of commerce? I didn't even know what one is. I still think we've got work to do.
Did you not say you can't move in unless you actually do it yourself?
Well, yeah. She's in now. Well, it's a serious point. I think still seen sometimes as men in suits. You know, it's only for the professionals or it's only for the big businesses. No, it's for everybody. And we talk about the chamber family. You're part of a family here. You know, we look after each other and that's what it's about.
Richard.
Taking both questions at once. So in terms of challenges, the other one that I've always seen as one of the biggest challenges to reconcile as a Chamber of Commerce is we have members with different views on very emotive topics. And sometimes people will suggest that, you know, chambers, oh, you know, you sit on the fence, you don't come down on the hard issues. Actually, sometimes you have to balance very much the views of your members. But in private, actually, what we spend a lot of time doing is facilitating conversations to find common ground. And the merger really has found common ground. And that common ground isn't just Plymouth and Exeter. We've been working on making sure there's an accredited, a really vibrant, worthy, authentic Devon Chamber now for several years. This really gives us a chance to do that now. It's just the beginning of that journey. And I think that with the two economic powerhouses of Exeter and Plymouth united in their chamber relationship now, one entity, Torbay has got its challenges and it's got some really great business organisations in there. And we want to support them where appropriate. North Devon, East Devon, you know, it's our chance now to really glue that voice together. And, you know, we can't sit on our laurels. Yes, this has been a massive year. The merger deserves some real congratulations for the members. But if we're really going to wear that badge, then the work just starts now.
So essentially, you're achieving a unified Devon.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my ambition is wider. You know, I want a unified peninsula. I think that we have an economy that rivals any of the big cities across the UK and actually cities across the world. It's diverse. We've got tourism, we've got marine, we've got nuclear, we've got aviation, we've got agritech, we've got everything. And it's a great place to live and a great place to work. Yes, we've got our infrastructure challenges and we need to make sure that we can articulate the things that we want to make business easier, to remove barriers. But Devon, yeah, absolutely. It's always been united in my view. I think that's been our vision all the way along. Devon was the only county in the whole of the UK without a British Chamber of Commerce accredited chamber. I think we fixed that gap now, and the energy that the team are bringing to this now is awesome. I feel like I've got a new job. You know, I've been the chair of the Plymouth and Devon Chamber for quite a long time, but I feel like there's a new energy, there's a vibrancy, but I tell you what, there's a massive responsibility now to get on and really make a difference in our home.
We talked a lot about our region and about Devon and business doing well, helping our members in Devon. Well, it became very obvious to me last week, we have a role to play with inward investment as well to our area. The Devon Chamber were invited to talk to a visiting group from a province in China, which filled me with dread, I have to say, having to present with an interpreter, which is a whole new experience of speaking in two-line sentences. But it became very obvious that the chamber movement and the chamber concept and the way we work together was a real selling point for our area. And actually, most of the questioning that came after presentations from various bodies at the Science Park was directed at the chamber, at us, really wanting to understand, well, how does that work? Really? All those businesses talk to each other? You help each other? You have your own ecosystem? We haven't used that word yet, much, you know, overused word, but we have this amazing ecosystem. And the Chinese delegation really thought, wow, I really quite like this. And so it became quite aware to me that our role actually is kind of expanding automatically. We're growing into being a very, very important role for, you know, lots of economic drivers for the area.
I couldn't agree more. Having access straight into Westminster via the British Chamber of Commerce team up there, that's really powerful. And most businesses don't have the scale to be able to ring up the chief exec or the leader of their local authority or their government department. But chambers can. Chambers can get a conversation going. And for inward investment, I agree entirely with Richard. It's very difficult to get seen, but you can showcase. You're offering a front door that then gives an almost seamless channel for businesses to get seen nationally, internationally, and locally.
You've mentioned that there are those who will moan or critique that we're not getting X, Y, and Z, A, B, and C from the powers that be. And then you often say that's because we haven't had a unified way of asking for it. Or as a region, we don't ask for it. So what does the Devon Chamber want to ask for? What does it believe that the region needs?
I'd like Richard, because he's been very modest when he introduced himself. He sits on a lot of regional panels and local panels and boards. He chairs an awful lot. So I'd like him to answer that in a moment. But just to put that into context a little bit, I think what we've been bad at in the past is putting a business case to what we want. So just saying we want a better railway line, for example, well, so does everybody. So what's the business case? What's the economic benefit that is going to bring to the region? So firstly, I'd say we need to be better at articulating that. Sometimes we've got to be realistic. I don't think we're going to get a motorway to Penzance anytime soon, but never say never. The other thing we've got to do is recognise where we've had wins. So we've got £4 billion going into the dockyard. We've got a free port, one of only eight in the country. So we do have some wins. Plymouth as a city has an awful lot of investment coming into it compared to others. So I think we're not very good also at selling how great it is. You know, every now and again, we get found out. You know, Condé Nast Traveler put us on the top 12 destinations in the world. I think it was the Times that described us as the coolest city by the sea. So I think we need to kind of recognise that there are some successes, but articulate those better, articulate the business case, and really galvanise it around what are our big asks and what difference will that make? Why do we need it? Not just we need a better railway or we need this and the other. Richard, sorry, I cut across you, I think, because I wanted to think about what are the big asks.
What I've witnessed, you know, I've just completed 7 years on the heart of the Southwest LEP, which has now ceased to exist in March. We're watching the journey of combined authorities with one forming in Devon and Torbay, which obviously we are leaning into. Stuart, you're part of that structure. I think the first thing that we need is the politicians locally to sort themselves out really quick. And whatever the legal structure, we absolutely need them aligned around how we're going to invest in Devon. You know, let's start with Devon. The infrastructure piece is an interesting one because, you know, I chaired the Peninsula Rail Task Force from 2014 until last year. We've had millions into the railway. We've got new trains. We've got more trains. We've got better signalling. We've got flood defences. And yet people are still moaning that the railway is rubbish. You know, we've secured millions. Yes, of course, we want it to be faster, straighter. But is it inhibiting business? There's capacity on the railway right now. The ability to work on the train is improving all the time. So that's pretty cool. Roads. We've got dual carriageway all the way to Plymouth. It's a 70-mile-an-hour road. We've got dual carriageway all the way to Hale. It's a 70-mile-an-hour road. You don't go any faster for a motorway. You know, so the A38, what we want is safety improved. We don't want anybody dying on that road. Yeah, it would be great to have it faster, but it is one of the arteries of Devon along with the A30. The biggest risk to us at the moment is that we don't secure the benefits of the investment that we've already got in Devon, in Exeter, in Plymouth, for the emerging generations, you know, for the children who haven't been born yet, for the children who are currently in primary school. We need a better education system. We need money devolved into education. We need the curriculum that suits the jobs that we've got in the pipeline today, already secured. This isn't fantasy. This is real opportunity. And, you know, my biggest fear at the moment is that we are a residential destination for good reason for tourism, and we value tourism. It's a big, big multi-billion contribution to our economy. But what we don't want is for our young people to be serving the experts of everywhere else. who just come here, work, get the high paid jobs and then go. Yes, we want their expertise. Yes, we want investment. Yes, we want appropriate migration. And we want to attract more population. So we want people to come and live and work in Devon, but we want them to stay in Devon, not just come do their job, go take the benefits of that earning elsewhere.
There's a real driver there as well from the universities and colleges.
I was going to say exactly that.
And we as a chamber are really closely connected with both of those. And there's a real driver to retain talent. We refer to it as the brain drain. And that is a key challenge for us, isn't it? Mm-hmm. To retain that talent and so that there are well-paid jobs. They're not going to naturally move north or move to the southeast. They're going to look to want to stay because those jobs, those careers, those career paths, their networks are here.
And we've talked about a lot in Extra about local homes for local workers as well. The ability for people to live and work in a reasonable area to become part of their local community, not feel they need to move miles away so it becomes affordable. And that's where I think you start to address some of those brain drain type issues.
It's a complex piece. It's not just skills. During the pandemic, even, we were looking at the labour market challenges, and I chaired a task and finish group for the LEP, and you realise that it's interconnected. The skills piece, absolutely vital.
Yeah.
Housing, vital. Infrastructure, vital. You know, if you can't get to your college, then that's an issue.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I think we should mention the Chamber runs the Local Skills Improvement Plan for the Department for Education, which for the first time ever has put the employer's voice at the heart of further education planning, which is vital. We need the education system to deliver the skills that employers need. Of course, people should have choice in their education pipeline. They should study the things they want to study. But we've got to be realistic. There's got to be jobs at the end of that.
Yeah.
And we've got to make sure that there's talent to actually do the work. So this is where the Chamber sits in all this. And some of it is behind the scenes. People don't see all the stuff we're doing. You know, between us four on the panel, we probably sit on 50 boards that are public, private sector. We're trying to make sure that that business voice is heard all the time.
And some of the work we did in Hampshire, which is about skills, identified that 25% of the jobs that we felt were needed within the next 5 years were not yet in existence.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's a really important opportunity to start to be able to work with what I think are world-leading academic centres that we've got in Devon to prepare for a world where actually some of the jobs you're talking about, they don't exist yet.
They say that the children in primary school now, 75% of the jobs they will do don't exist now.
Yeah.
So by the time they get there, there'll be a whole new range of skills that are needed. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure that the education system is agile, flexible, but that there's some core skills and abilities as well as education. Because you come out with an O-level in something doesn't mean you can do the job. I mean, it's important. I'm not belittling education, but I'm saying there's skills in that. There's personality traits, there's resilience, there's creativity, there's innovative thinking. Those are the things we need to develop in the next generation so that they can be agile to all these new jobs.
We need more homes. We need this planning freed up. We need the government's commitment around housing to be honoured on our patch. We need the whole of Devon to be an economic driver. You know, yes, invest in the cities and the sectors that create the most, but the workers live all over Devon. They live all over Cornwall. And we need to make sure that they've got good facility. Talent attraction, talent retention are two massive challenges. I mean, businesses are reeling a little bit this week. The government introduced the national insurance increase for businesses. It's literally hammered business. We're going to have to adapt. But now we want the quid pro quo. We need the government to genuinely invest in its promise of growth for business, for wealth generation. And that's inclusive growth, inclusive wealth. That's what we need to see now. We need to see those opportunities maximised. Yes, we want the public sector fixed. Yes, we need a great NHS. We definitely need education and schools fixed. But that in itself won't generate growth. No. That's what we need for a healthy society. As a chamber, we're totally supportive of that and the goals. The LEP has gone. If we're going to have devolution, if we're going to have local decisions, then we need local money, fair funding, so that we're on a level playing field nationally, internationally. Yeah. So that's what we need to hear now. At the moment, there's a lot of conversation going around on the combined authorities. There's not enough money to back it up at the moment to make a massive, significant difference. The money's useful, but it's not what we need. We've got a business offer that can take 200 million, 400 million, half a billion pounds and turn that around and solve some of the UK's big problems. But we've got to be seen as a serious contender for that kind of investment.
go back to your question, some of that takes time as well.
I was talking to somebody from Somerset Chamber about their new gigafactory and how exciting it is for them and what it'll do for the local economy. I said, yeah, but don't forget, that took 15 years of hard, behind-the-scenes graft to get to this point. So some of the things that Richard's talking about are realisable in the short term, but I think some of the benefits of the Chamber is that consistency of conversation which has to happen over years and years for something major to actually come to fruition. I think that's a real challenge and an opportunity.
You've just highlighted another benefit of Chambers is that we have a corporate memory for these long-term public infrastructure conversations or public investment or intervention. I mean, I was part of those gravity conversations for 7 years. Yes, I mean, it's a hugely complex thing for a project like that, but so are the science parks, but so is the business park in South Moulton, so is the business park in Torrington. These projects take time. The railway, the lens is like 50 years. You know, it's not five-year projects. You know, the funding control periods are every 5 years. It moves at a glacial pace. But in the grand scheme of national infrastructure, it's moving at a reasonable pace. But we've got to pay for. So as a chamber, we have to influence fast track, slow track, almost glacially not moving track, you know. And I think the great thing is that we as board members are elected. You know, I think people forget this. It is a democratic organisation that gives us challenges around diversity because we get elected to this organisation. But that's a powerful mandate when you're talking to elected members and to officers. But the fact that we're elected and there is a turnover of us going forward means that you pass that baton, that memory. So whilst you might not have been involved in the conversation, you have a link to people who were in that conversation. I think that is really powerful. The challenge of today, even in this podcast, there's a bit too much maleness in this room, you know. So I think, you know, and we want to encourage more and more women or people from underrepresented groups to be the leaders of tomorrow. You know, I don't want to be the chair of the chamber forever. You know, I mean, we're looking for the next generation of leaders to come forward in a business space. And, you know, I'm really pleased to say that the board of the Devon Chamber is a much more diverse representation of our society, but we've got to do better on that.
Yeah. I was just going to say, if you want to see the power of diversity, linking it to the point we were making earlier about these big infrastructure projects, the Tamar Bridge came out of the Chamber of Commerce, but it came out of the Junior Chamber of Commerce. We've got all the paperwork going back to show that this happened, and it's brilliant. I love it because the Junior Chamber said we need a road link between Devon and Cornwall at Salt Ash. And I think rather patronisingly, they were told, we'll go and make a business case for it. So they did. And they got the Tamar Bridge built. And that was young people's thinking. And I think we need more of that. We need more diverse thinking. You know, I don't want to sit in a room full of Stuart Elfords. I mean, God forbid, that would be awful, wouldn't it?
But
I mean,
that because neither do we.
No, one of me is more than enough. I know. But the point being, we need that diversity of thinking. It's so exciting what we can do when we all get together.
Well, I think the future is next gen for Chambers.
This is good because I was going to actually ask, we've spoke a lot about the past. Richard mentioned about what we've achieved. Stuart said about education and jobs that don't exist yet. What about the future? How do you see Chamberland in the next 5 or 10 years?
Well, Chamberland's our next gen. So Chamberland will be led by our next gen. So I think both chambers, as we've come together, have recognised that through the 30 Under 30 and our next gen initiative. And we will be integrating our next gen into our board. They're coming to our board meeting this week.
Yep.
They have a voice at our table. And we want them to have, and I certainly want them to have, an increasingly more powerful voice because they are aware of it. You know, these are newly grads, new startups, new entrepreneurs. These are individuals who have a vision. They're early in their business journey, but they have a vision of where we're going. They have to be aware of what's happening in the world. So that's where I think our drivers are coming from.
And supported when they have those ideas.
Yeah.
I think it's quite shocking how quickly you age.
I know.
You know, fundamentally, we were all young leaders at one point, you know. Who didn't
Although your hairstyles are getting younger.
This is true. It is true.
He's got hair.
Very true. I'll take the compliment, I thought. Lost my train of thought. Next gen. Yeah, the point of that is that it is the next gen and the next gen. You can't sit on your laurels for this. You know, the clock is ticking. And so to keep your relevance, that's why churning the representation is important. You know, that's why we have good governance to make sure that we can really keep this piece going. Our mission over this next 12 months is to effect the transition, is to get it really, really embedded from where we were into a great starting place for chamber activity in Devon. Then the mission is to make sure that that diversity of thought, inclusivity of membership is absolutely enshrined in what we do going forward. You know, and I can't wait to meet the next chair of the Devon Chamber because we're going to present an opportunity for them to lead. And that's the great thing about chambers is nobody really owns it. The members own it. The community owns it. It is part of the fabric of society. And I think that that's why perhaps that Chinese delegation was curious, because why has it endured? Why have we been around for hundreds of years? Because isolation, businesses can quickly become irrelevant if in isolation. And I think that community, that sense of responsibility, you know, one of the things I think that we have to do is walk our own talk. We have to be authentic and we've got to learn our lessons. And that means having difficult conversations. You know, that means reflecting on what was our part as businesses in the riots and the disruption and the protests that we've recently witnessed. What are we going to do to make sure that we have an inclusive society? Why are our employees unhappy? How do we make sure that the voice includes everyone? And I think that that's going to be a massive challenge for the chamber going forward, but also a huge opportunity to do things differently, to bust the white middle-aged men in suits in closed rooms smoking cigars history, because that is our history. It's a fair criticism. In our living memory, that is what we were witnessing. We were witnessing misogyny. We were witnessing sexism. We were witnessing racism. We've got to not anymore. We've got to stand up. We're not doing business that way. We're going to do business well. We're going to help businesses do well. And that's not about being vitriolic or holier than thou. It's about just showing the way and helping businesses that want to do the right thing. Because I think most businesses, most humans want to do the right thing. But it comes back to education, it comes back to opportunity, it comes back to equity. If you don't have equity of opportunity, then you're not going to develop that full broad experience or warmth or love for other people because you're living in your own bubble.
I just wanted to make a point about this broader point about community, which I completely buy into. And I think in terms of relevance, I think that's something that the Chamber needs to do more of. We've started doing it. We are relevant. But in terms of our relationship with the broader community and the community organisations, I've seen us actually start to engage much more with those organisations. And actually, they want to engage with the Chamber as well. Mm. So we talk about being a business organisation, but actually we're turning into a community organisation. So we are relevant across all those supporting organisations that actually affect and help communities.
And I think in an increasingly technological world that we're all operating in, that humanity and that human-to-human interaction, I think, suddenly becomes proportionately, massively important.
And business knows this, and that's why our peer-to-peer networks were so successful, because they value that. And that is why chamber members are 3.5 times more likely to survive and thrive in business than non-members, because it's a supportive family that will help you and your business.
I was at a Labour conference, not Labour Party, but a conference about the New Deal making work pay bill that's going through. And the chair of the TUC was there. And one of his parting shots was, you don't resolve conflict via Teams, Zoom, or any other digital media. You don't understand the people you're negotiating with until you're in the room, until you breathe the same air. You know, that's when you understand. That's when you resolve conflict. That's when you settle dispute. But that's when you make money.
It's funny, bringing that back to the merger, Jabo Butera has said to me many times, sit down and break bread with people. Just eat with them. Eating with them is really, really important. And when I look back at how this merger happened, there were a couple of breakfasts, there were a couple of dinners where we sat down and we talked. And when you realise that the person from Exeter hasn't got 3 heads and 12 toes, you know, it's kind of actually people are people. And when you sit down, they're nice guys. Even Richard's a nice guy, you know.
Just to close out the podcast, I'm going to go around the table and thank you each individually for joining us. But to close off, can you give us your top pointers why somebody should join their local Chamber of Commerce, Stuart Elford?
Well, as I said, to survive, to thrive, to connect, to grow, to succeed.
Richard Marsh?
I think the community piece for me, be part of the community, the business community and the broader community, and be successful.
Steve Gates?
We are stronger together, simply.
Rich Stevens?
I'd like people to join because I think it's in their best interest, in their good interest. I'd like them to join because it'll help us to do more. And I'd like them to join because it's pretty fun as well.
Thank you very much for joining us. My name is Paul Philpott, and don't forget to subscribe and share.
In Conversation With is supported by Westcott's Chartered Accountants and Business Advisors, supporting Southwest individuals and businesses for over 30 years. Westcott's. We're here. Produced by Fresh Air Studios. Full audio and video production services for business podcasts and corporate events. Visit freshairstudios.com. Presented by Stuart Elford. Produced by Paul Philpott. Edited and mixed by Martin Burgess Moon. Video production by Mark Stevenson. Production support by Lisa Hartwell. Copyright Devon Chamber and Fresh Air Studios Limited. All rights reserved.